Well, it is Thursday, which means we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in our golf analyst, golf expert. He is Adam Stanley. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam_Stanley. Mr. Stanley, it's probably your favorite week of the year, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's Masters Thursday. We just had one of these, but I'm not complaining. That's for sure.
It's funny when you say that, because I know that you obviously did a lot of work leading into this tournament, and one of the guys you talked to, of course, at length was Corey Connors, and he had talked to you about adjustments being made, and I thought that was very interesting considering he did play in this tournament not even 6 months ago. What was your biggest takeaway, I guess, when you're talking to players, whether it's Connors or anybody else, November Masters to now a traditional April Masters?
Yeah, I think with the traditional April Masters, you get a traditional Augusta National, insofar as, you know, this golf course is playing ripping quick. And that seemed to be the common thought early in the week. And then certainly as day one got underway, it was like, wow, this golf course is moving. And, you know, I talked to Derek Ingram, who's Corey Connors' coach, and of course, the longtime Golf Canada national team coach. And he was like, Adam, the golf course is crispy. And he's like, emphasis on the crispy. And that was on, you know, Wednesday. So for the Green Jackets of Augusta National to get the golf course moving that fast before the tournament even started, Mackenzie Hughes said on Tuesday, this golf course is playing like it does on Saturday and Sunday already. So that's the biggest thing. That's to answer your question specifically on how much change there's been, how much adjustments needed to be made. That November Masters, Augusta National was chewy. It was soft. It was the beginning of the Augusta National season. But now in April, that's the end of the Augusta National season. And, you know, this golf course is turned up to 11.
Well, and kind of on the opposite end of that, I know Phil Mickelson talked about, you know, it's been a long time since this golf course has had to be respected. And for a lot of people, you're like, that's kind of a weird statement to make. But that was what he was referring to, was that when the course has firm greens, it's one of the toughest in the world. And Adam, you've obviously played it. You're not a pro, but just talk about what that's like and kind of how much of a difference that makes. I mean, even for the average listener, your course that you play three times a week, if the greens are firm, it's going to be a tougher play. And that's, I think, what a lot of people were referring to, right?
Exactly. And, you know, you think about what Phil Mickelson was referring to, and that the greens have been pretty soft, and that's of no fault of anyone's other than Mother Nature's. You know, there has been some pretty inconsistent weather leading into the Masters tournament the last three, maybe even 4 years. And certainly in November last year, it was just a product of having the tournament being played in November and it was soft. Now it's been a very, very dry spring. It's been hot early in Georgia, and we've seen that now with the golf course being a lot harder. So with a golf course playing harder, that opens the door for a lot more creativity. A lot of shots are going to have to be you're going to have to use the slope a lot more with your shots. You're going to maybe use a putter off the green. When I played, it was the Monday after the tournament. It hadn't rained all week, and you know, at times my caddy physically moved me and repositioned my shoulders because I was aiming, you know, a putt that was 2 feet outside. And he's like, no, man, you got to go 15 feet outside and just let the fast green and the slope do its thing. So what we're going to see certainly, and we've started to see it already, you know, kind of through the early part of Thursday, was some very interesting shot selections, some creative things, and just guys having to use their brain a lot around Augusta National, because that's the kind of golf course that it is.
Okay, we started talking about the firm greens. I want to go kind of now more into bigger picture, and I've been thinking about this a lot, and I'm curious if you have as well, or, you know, some of your peers in the golf world have talked about this as well. But the absence of Tiger Woods, and obviously a huge presence. You and I have talked a couple of times since his accident about the pressure to come back and play and what he means to the game of golf. But Adam, you know, I think for a lot of people, the 2019 Masters was a great moment, but if we're being perfectly honest, the Tiger era in golf is over. And you know, the absence of Tiger Woods at Augusta is obviously louder than absence on a normal July weekend. I'm curious, is this the future of what golf will look like? And if so, you know, is it for the taking for somebody? And what's your thought on golf post Tiger?
Yeah, I mean, somebody could write an essay, a university essay on that subject, because there's a number of factors. The first is I think the Masters actually hides the lack of Tiger. I think, you know, the guy in the red shirt and the green jacket on Sunday will always overhang this tournament, but because it's the Masters, it's Augusta National, it's a tight, tight field, so the best players in the world are high, high up on people's radars. That's okay. When you get to a regular Sunday in July and there's no Tiger Woods at the Memorial, for example, that's really where it's going to be a little bit more pronounced. However, I think what we're now seeing is less a individual star and a collection of guys who are part of this Tiger Woods sort of echo boom. And they're all pointing at him saying, this is why we're playing golf. This is why we're playing golf at a high level. And because of him, we now have Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the only one who I do think has the global star power is Rory. And I think Rory is an MVP in the interview room. He's an MVP on the golf course. Rory has really, really struggled, you know, from a major championships perspective, but he's got, you know, however, I think he's got four, maybe five. I don't know off the top of my head, but he's got enough majors that the guys out there like Justin Thomas, et cetera, they're chasing him. Rory's chasing Arnold Palmer in the all-time history books of major championship wins. So if Rory starts to get back into the conversation of all-time greats, then all of a sudden we have this global superstar. But because he's been stuck in neutral for 5 years, that's why it's starting to be like, well, who's going to do it?
Does golf need that guy? Do they need somebody to grab it and run with it, whether it is Rory or maybe it is Justin Thomas? Do they need somebody to take that crown?
Well, they had Arnold Palmer, and I mean, he did his thing. Then they had Jack Nicklaus, but Jack was always with somebody else. There was Arnold, and then there was Tom Watson, and there was, you know, you can kind of go down the line of people that Jack had to keep the conversation going. Then there was Tiger, and there was just Tiger, and there's been just Tiger for almost two decades. So a whole generation of golf fans have been used to singular superstar, and I don't think that we have gotten the opportunity to be adjusted to collection of superstars. So golf is just used to having Tiger as the North Star, as the guy, and then that's it. I do think that golf will start to be adjusted to the collection of stars, but we're not ready for that. So it's going to be Tiger, and it will continue to be Tiger until such time as he says, no, I'm out. And then it'll be a collection. And who knows, maybe there's somebody who's six or seven right now swinging a club in, you know, Northern Ireland because Rory's doing it and he's going to be the next singular star and we'll see another one in 20 years. But yeah, I think it's Tiger. It's going to still be Tiger. And the good thing is we have a big time group of guys kind of waiting in the wings.
He's Adam Stanley. Every Thursday, he will join us to talk all things golf. Of course, it is Masters Week, and we'll focus more right now on the 2021 edition. I was telling you off the air, I gave your podcast a spin this morning, and your first guest is Mike Weir, a Canadian golf podcast. Well, why don't you start with the 2003 Masters champion? And it's funny, you talk about a singular star. For a lot of Canadian golfers, it's been Mike Weir and Mike Weir only. You know, a lot of people, to kind of make a comparison, and you're looking at basketball, people look at Vince Carter in the dunk competition and what he did with the Raptors and kind of allowing the next generation of Canadian basketball stars to emerge. I think the obvious answer is yes, Adam, but how has Mike Weir impacted Canadian golf, and, you know, what has he done for the game in our country?
Yeah, I mean, you talk to Mackenzie Hughes and Corey Connors, and it's like Tiger's one, Mike Weir is 1A. And you talk to somebody like me, and it's like, yeah, Tiger is number one, and Mike Weir is 1A for the reason why I got into the game. So you can't help but think that the Mike Weir effect was unignorable for a large generation of Canadian golfers. And it wasn't so bad that it came along at the same time as Tiger. And we forget that Mike Weir won 8 times in the era of Tiger's dominance, including a major, and got to number 3 in the world. And golf is the ultimate in what have you done for me lately. And Mike Weir, to be frank, hasn't done much in the last decade until he turned 50, and now he's had this career rejuvenation. So a lot of people easily forgot how dominant and impressive and important Mike Weir was. But for anyone who is a winner on the PGA Tour right now and is Canadian, It is because Mike Weir came from a small town, won the Masters, and all those guys were 15, 14, 16, 17, 18 years old, and they wanted to be just like him. And I think that, you know, his impact on the sport is unmeasurable, and we are 1,000,000% seeing that now with Brooke Henderson on the female side. And I personally can't wait to see, you know, a girl who's 11 or 12 right now seeing Brooke do her thing and then come along and have this big collection of female superstars in the country as well.
No, I thought about this question. I'm putting you right on the spot, so I apologize. But Adam, what would be if, you know, let's for the sake of this conversation, Adam Stanley's the 2021 Masters champion. What's on your Masters champion dinner menu, Mr. Sam?
Oh, man. It's funny because I think about it sometimes and then I totally forget about what I think. But we'll go seafood to start. We'll try to go Atlantic Ocean and Pacific Ocean. Maybe we get some scallops. Maybe we get some shrimp. Maybe we get some sort of salmon sushi sort of thing from the West. And then Maine, I think you got to go Alberta beef because I think as a Canadian, you would be incredible. You would be just chucked out of here, like just way gone. But maybe something, you know, a fish dish from the North as well. So then you're really Canadianizing the whole deal. And then I think for dessert, you got to go and some PEI potatoes, obviously. So yes, I'm just thinking Alberta beef and like, you know, some fries or some kind of nice PEI potato that'll work out nicely. And then for dessert, let's go with like a Saskatoon berry or some kind of mixed berry pie with some vanilla ice cream and Canadian ice wine, and we'll get some Okanagan wine and some Niagara wine to round out the whole
delicious
deal. I think I've thought about this more than I care to admit.
You gotta go, well, I think, like you said, you gotta go Canadiana, right? I mean, that's kind of what you have to do if you're gonna have it, right?
100%. That's what Mike did. Mike served, I think he talked to me about this on the pod. He served elk. And there was fish as well, I think, from out west, from BC. And then there was a bunch of other things. Apparently, there is some ice wine from Weir's Masters win champions dinner still in Augusta National's wine cellar, which they bust out every once in a while as well. That was kind of the gift that he left the wine cellar, which apparently is quite robust from what Mike told me.
No doubt. Okay, let's talk about the 2021 tournament. And, of course, we do have to talk about Corey Connors. He is one of three Canadians in the field this week. And a red-hot start on Thursday for Mr. Connors.
Yeah, a very nice start for Corey Connors. Was tied for the lead at one point earlier on Thursday, on today. And, you know, he came into the tournament. I talked to him, and he had said, listen, there's no – I think we had talked about this before, but he's like – there's no hole that scares me. You know, I work the ball right to left. That's my comfort shot. My putting's is improved. I've learned so much. My caddy's super experienced here. I just feel good. And he came out of the gate, made a bogey on one, settled himself down and turned things around nicely, certainly through that middle part of his round. So, you know, he's a guy that I was saying is a sneaky good pick to win the whole thing. You know, how the next couple days unfold obviously remains to be seen, but, you know, from the perspective of coming into this tournament with like 100-1 odds, but all the tools to play well, we certainly saw it early in the day through nine holes, tied for the lead. Get Listowel Golf Club on the horn and just say, man, what do we got brewing here? But it's cool. I mean, it's nice to see, you know, Mackenzie Hughes as well was early in his day. He was in red figures too. It's just kind of fun to be like, we're not just happy to have Canadian guys in the field. It's like, no, they're going to try to compete and contend for this title.
And let's hope that maple leaf beside Corey Connors' name remains kind of on that front page of the leaderboard. It would be nice to see him on television this weekend. I know that certainly has been a struggle for some Canadian fans as well. I know you talked to Weir about this. I'm sure you've talked to other players about this as well. But a lot of the times when we're looking at a tournament, we say, okay, who does this course set up nicely for? You know, what type of player is this course or this layout good for? But as you talked with Mike about the Masters, it's all different kinds of champions, but yet there always seems to be that select few, Adam, who play well consistently here. Can you wrap your finger as to why?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that even the casual sports fan knows about Augusta National. You can probably pick out all the holes on TV because you see them every single year. But once you actually kind of get into it, you realize that there are innumerable tricks. There are so many things from the green, from the fairway, that you really have to know how to navigate. And I think that the people who play well there every year are people who just have the most complete of games on that particular week. You have to drive the ball well. You have to be a guy that if you're not going to move it right to left, which is what a lot of the tee shots call for, you have to at least be able to hit a soft fade from left to right in there so then it doesn't roll out into a crazy spot and you got to be left punching out. So you got to hit it well off the tee. It's a second shot golf course. Everybody knows that. The greens are rock hard, so you have to be creative or you have to just absolutely flush them in there close. And then you have to make a ton of putts. So it's up to somebody's complete examination, and for them to pass this test, they have to do absolutely everything right. And more often than not, it's the guys who know their way around Augusta National better than anyone else who can apply that learning and can know exactly where to hit it off the tee, where to miss it when they're approaching the green, and then knowing which quadrant to hit it if they are hitting it well, and of course rolling in a few putts. So it is no surprise to see the same people play well every year at Augusta National.
A couple more with Adam Stanley. He joins us every Thursday to talk all things golf. Okay, Dustin Johnson is the defending champion, but Adam, as we get into the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, who are a couple of names that you're keeping an eye on, kind of tailing off of the last question in terms of who plays well? What are some of the names you're watching for as we get into Saturday and Sunday?
For sure, Justin Thomas. You think about the way that JT has played Augusta National and who he's surrounded himself with in his practice rounds. Obviously not this year, but he's usually right there with Tiger and with Fred Couples. A couple great champions there to learn from. And when you look at how much JT has learned, the dude's golf IQ is super high. Finished, I think it was like 30th, 20th, 18th, 15th, 12th, and then 4th. In his career at Augusta National. So the constant improvements for me just seems like it's JT's time, if not now, then soon. Jordan Spieth obviously has played very poorly up until this year. All of a sudden, the cliche stuck to the process. He's absolutely done that. Same caddy, same coach, kind of just grinded it out. And then, of course, won last week in Texas and comes into this week with a lot of momentum there. Brooks Koepka, I'm interested to see what happens with him, obviously, with the injuries and everything like that. So I'm not 100% sure on Brooks, but Bryson, of course, big time conversation around him. He seems to be a lot more settled in his chase for speed. It was a lot of like, I'm going to put on all this weight. I'm going to keep lifting weights. I'm going to eat all these crazy things. And then all of a sudden it's like, dude, no, the human body can only do so much and consume so much. And I'm glad to see that he's, reined a lot of that in. So I do like Bryson just because it's the kind of place where he should play well. And last year was a bit of an anomaly, but obviously he wasn't feeling 100%. Now that he is, if he can dial his in his irons, then I think Bryson's got a good shot too.
One of my favorite stories leading into this year was Dustin Johnson, how he said that, last year I didn't even ask until I was on the 18th hole on my second shot about where I was on the leaderboard. And his caddy told him, dude, you're up by five. Like, we've got this in the bag. I'm going to ask this question. I know it's not a full house, but bringing back some sort of the roars at Augusta, last year there was no patrons. This year there are some there. That's part of what makes this tournament special. And to bring DJ's point home, I think he would have better idea that he's up by five if there were crowds there last year.
1,000,000%. Yes, for sure. Limited patrons. That was kind of the company line from Augusta National this year. But you can tell there's this buzz. And I don't know if it's like a buzz because it's Augusta National and there's people, or because it's Augusta National and there's people, and oh my God, it feels like something normal is happening again. And I think that that is going to play a bit of a role, certainly for us watching on TV. But you just think it's the Masters, it's the first week of April, there's people there, they're cheering, they're safe, they're vaccinated. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We are kind of back to seeing not normal, but some semblance of what normal can be again. And that's not lost on the players, who are all excited to have patrons back again. Every single person said as such. But also, I think the viewers as well, who are starting to realize that this event, perhaps more than any other, is marking a turn, a positive turn, as it relates to how can we get sports back to what they were, you know, in 2019 and prior to that.
Final one on the Masters, then I want to finish with the women. But you had talked about, you know, you've played it, you've covered this event numerous times. What we've all seen it on TV. What's your favorite hole at Augusta National?
Favorite hole of the obvious ones is 12. Favorite hole of the not so obvious is 10. I think 10 just gets lost because 9 is an amazing hole, and then obviously 11, you start amen corner, and number 10, you don't realize it's 110 feet from the tee to the green, and you can't really tell that when you're on television until you start actually walking it. And the tee shot is absolutely fabulous. It's just stunningly framed. And then when you're on the green and you're looking back up, you realize how perfectly laid out, you know, the fairway bunkers are and just what kind of action you do get from tee to green. So, and it's, you know, from the top to the bottom, it's a pretty jarring sort of look from one point of the property to another. So number 12, for sure, it's an idyllic par three, but number 10 is probably my favorite hole out there.
It's amazing how they make it look so flat on television, isn't it? Because I know that for a lot of people that have actually been on the ground at Augusta, it's far from actually being
flat. It is not. It is not flat, no.
Yeah, you get quite the workout working or walking that thing. Okay, before we let you go, you're, of course, very dialed in on the LPGA as well. What's going on there after the first major of the season, and what's the status, for example, for the Canadian superstar Brooke Henderson?
Yeah, they're off this week. Obviously, all eyes on the Masters. But next week, it's gonna be fun. You know, the LPGA Tour, ton of momentum already. First major of the year, done and dusted. But next week, they're going out to Hawaii, and Brooke is actually defending her title from both 2018 and 2019. 2020, the tournament was canceled, so she did not have a shot to try to win for the third year in a row. But now she does. So she told me last week, Hawaii is a place that really agrees with her. How could it not? But she says that she plays really well in the wind, and it's a new golf course this year versus the two that she played when she did win the tournament. But good vibes, a good place that she's comfortable in. Obviously, a very beautiful setting. And Brooke's played okay up to this point this year. I mean, a handful of top 10 finishes, four top 20 finishes out of five tournaments. So the consistency is there, at least as it relates to results. She's looking to string four good rounds together, and where better to do it than a place than Hawaii, where she's had a ton of success over the last couple of years.
He's Adam Stanley. He is all things golf. He joins us every Thursday on The Big Show, and we thank him for his time. And a reminder, if you missed it, he's got the brand new Canadian Golf Podcast, Next Rounds on Me, the first guest appropriately on Masters Week, and for a Canadian Golf Podcast, is the 2003 Masters champion, Mike Weir. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts, and, of course, on the women's side, the Amy and Adam Show as well. Those are both once a week. Is that correct, my friend?
The Amy and Adam Show runs every time that there is a LPGA Tour event, so not quite once a week.
Looking forward to it. I know you're going to have a lot of fun with both of those podcasts, and we appreciate your time as always, my friend. Enjoy the next 3.5 days. I know you're going to have a ton of fun.
Thanks, man.